now that you have time to reflect over coffee, do you have any further questions, Commissioner Munro?
No, thank you, sir.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes. Find the right switch. Just one, Mr. Osborne. I just wanted some clarification relating to the breakdown, whether there is a breakdown of figures for vacant dwellings between urban and rural properties. I just couldn't see any reference anywhere to whether there had been that level of analysis or whether the figures just reflected all dwellings.
The figures at this point represent all dwellings. I'm unsure whether those have been broken down any further at this stage. I would have to go back to some of the rationale assessments.
So this is not something that was part of your brief to look at that level of detail? That's
not,
a rationale
not part thing. Of, yeah, that was part of the current supply and the demand moving forward, rather than what the future requirements were.
I asked because it goes to what we need to turn our minds to regarding rezoning on the fringe areas. And so I was trying to get some sort of feel for whether there's as much of an issue with vacant dwellings in those rural residential sites as elsewhere in the district, particularly in the urban area.
Yeah, I don't have a
and you've got no feel from it. No, you don't know from anything else you've done.
I haven't actually seen a breakdown of those unoccupied dwellings at this point, a breakdown beyond the ward itself.
Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner McLeod.
Thank you. I must admit, I'm trying to get my head around the feasible capacity, the realisable capacity is something chapter myself. One statement you made was with the key assumptions about sufficient infrastructure with your discussion with Commissioner Munro was if infrastructure is internalised. Can you expand on what you meant by that?
Just in terms of the infrastructure is internalised in the development costs, or whether it becomes part of a cost for the community. So we're talking there about, I guess, the impact that internalising the costs of infrastructure has on feasibility for any given development.
There you go. So that's a developer cost as opposed to a community cost in terms of council picking up.
Yeah.
And one other thing that in key variables is, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on urban growth boundaries. Whether is that, would that be considered a key variable, given that Queenstown essentially doesn't really have an urban growth boundary? Arrowtown has a very rigid and quite historic growth boundary, and Wanaka has. How you would see that impact of
the urban growth boundary, I think, to a degree, is determined by the provisions of the zones themselves. So I think in as far as the zoning provides for a degree of enabled capacity, then it obviously impacts on the, in terms of a flow-on effect. So whether there's medium or high density that's provided for inevitably within that urban growth boundary, how high a proportion within that urban growth boundary, then yes, absolutely, in terms of how it determines those zones more than anything else. Beyond that, in terms of the market itself, only insofar as generally you have higher built amenity within the urban growth boundaries than you do outside, and that's reflected in the sale price essentially of dwellings and so forth that sit within there.
So if you, for example, looked at and I'm not assuming you've done this, but in terms of the development capacity in Arrowtown, which has historically had quite a tight urban growth boundary, versus the capacity, would that, the fact that that's getting to the stage where obviously it's impacting the price, but the availability, so you end up with almost driving up I'm driving up the price, down the capacity. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I think, I mean, that's reflective of the provisions, obviously, within each one of those areas. And our town has quite, as you said, quite restrictive provisions in terms of what you can and can't do. And that essentially affects the enabled capacity by any given zone, which decreases supply. And if there is demand for that particular area, then the price corresponds for that increase in demand and will continue to go up.
And is it, you, in terms of that urban growth rate, it's not having a significant effect in terms of the capacity of the Wanaka experience?
In terms of the Wanaka experience, there's sufficient capacity within that urban growth boundary to meet that under the PDP anyway, to meet those needs, and therefore is less likely to have an impact on price, the impact on price that's representative of supply anyway.
So now I'm going to get you to pull out your crystal ball. And is there a foreseeable horizon that the urban growth capacity, urban growth boundary in the Wanaka scenario may affect that capacity?
Well, I mean, the capacity that's there at the moment exceeds the demand for the whole ward. I think it's just over 5,000. It's actually in 5,239 is feasible within the Wanaka urban growth boundary. And that goes, that demand, in terms of the reconciliation with demand, that's beyond the 2048 horizon. And that's when, I think the important thing there is that those aren't, in terms of the marginality between those two numbers, if you've got 5,000 demand and you've got 5,200 capacity, we're already talking about a margin that's included in that of 30%. And obviously that margin shrinks as the market becomes more active. There's less and less, then the realisation of the existing feasible capacity increases. One of the other things that the model hasn't taken into consideration is moving forward, the decrease in the value of improvements on existing land. And as those buildings deteriorate, the feasibility increases on those. So that's another thing that adds to that moving forward in the future as well. So I would suggest that in terms of the Wanaka ward and the Upuka area, that there's more than sufficient realisable capacity to meet the next 30 odd years at least.
You wouldn't mind writing that down and signing it in blood? That yeah, that's fine, thank you.
Question for you, rising out of Ms. Hampson's evidence. One point she draws attention to is that experience on the ground indicates that the MDR zoning is not actually being developed at a medium density level, which of course is one of your assumptions. Do you have an issue with that observation, and if you think it's correct, can you express a view as to why that's correct?
I think what we're experiencing at the moment is that there are some medium, obviously, density zones that are resulting in low density development, and I think when you look at the model itself, it actually has quite a low feasible capacity for those areas. And I think that's been reflected in the market, where the market is actually producing low-density product in those areas that would still be comparable to what's come out of the model in terms of feasible capacity. It may not actually be resulting in medium-density product, but it is still resulting in the same capacity in terms of the output from that the model would suggest. It's just that given the level of demand for medium-density product at the moment, the market is not responding with high levels of medium density product, and it's more likely to, at this point in time, result in low density that has a lower risk in terms of being able to sell their product. And I think that's been picked up in the model to a degree, where it's looked at that feasibility and the likelihood of the market accepting it, and it's come out with quite a low, I mean, it's lower than the high density in terms of the ratio of feasible to enabled capacity.
You've identified one question that you've already, in passing, you answer one question that was in my mind. Why is it a lower risk vote? Why is MDR a development comparatively high risk?
It's about acceptance within the market more than anything else. I mean, the reason that we continue, unfortunately, to, in some places, build three-bedroom houses is because three-bedroom houses are the accepted norm. And because of that, developers feel that they can move that product more quickly, regardless necessarily of what the demand on the ground actually may be for one- and two-bedroom houses, as we're finding now more and more. It all depends on the perception of the market and the acceptance of that product. So you wouldn't necessarily build apartments in an area where essentially nobody would want apartments, where there's no amenity value and there's no additional value to actually being in a small unit in any given area. You haven't got accessibility or anything like that. You wouldn't actually build them there because the market wouldn't actually accept them. You wouldn't be able to sell them. So what we see resulting in that area is the market saying to itself, well, what is most likely to move quickly and what is likely to be accepted by the market at this point in time. Now, obviously, those preferences change through time, especially in areas that don't necessarily have a critical mass to create that amenity at the beginning. They're more likely to be lower density product. But as you get more and more people in a given area, you create that critical mass which supports a higher density residential dwelling.
Is the, from your earlier discussion, is one consequence of that the developers focusing on what they can eat, they can move quickly and easily, that the shortfall in the market for what we might call affordable homes is only getting worse?
There is definitely the potential for that. The margins, especially in some areas, are not high enough for that affordable product, then you're less likely to see that product taking up the opportunities, which is why the next step for our model, especially with Queenstown, is to look at the likely realisation of affordable, or the price brackets anyway, in which the housing is likely to fall, and whether a lot of our capacity is actually going to be realised at the front end that's too expensive for the demand. So we need to try and reconcile the demand and supply in terms of those price brackets and in terms of the timing that the market is likely actually to realise that. But part of the low to medium density is our suboptimal realisation of capacity, and that's part of that difference between feasible and realisation.
And in terms of that difference, I suppose I just go back to your the table and your summary, looking at the aggregate numbers. If feasible is 50% of enabled and realisable is 50% of feasible, we're going realisable to 25% of enabled. Is that unduly conservative, or is that realistic in your view?
Well, firstly, that 25% is just on the modelled capacity rather than the numbers below that, which are ones that talk about specific developments that potentially developers have already indicated would have a degree of capacity. So in terms of it as a percentage of the total, it's obviously a lot higher than the 25%. It's around 30-35% of that total, simply because instead of taking off 50% of all feasible capacity, we're actually only taking off, when you average it across all zones, we're only taking off 30-32%. Again, that's higher than the NPS would suggest, simply because of the environment in which Upper Clutha sits.
So the end result is that your realisable is about, overall, is about 30-35%. I've done the numbers, but that's your view.
Yes.
And in terms of the interrelationship between the urban centres, so we've got the triangle of Wanaka, including Albertown, Hawea and Lugget, are they effectively one housing market? in terms of supply and demand. Have you analysed them in greater detail? Is there a separate market for Hawea and Luggett compared to Wanaka, for instance?
I mean, essentially they do have a variance within the market. There's a variance in terms of prices for a start. So they do represent different opportunities and different choices within the market. But that to a degree is driven by supply within those markets. So as I've talked about before, that demand is actually relatively price sensitive, especially between those centres. And so the level of supply and accessibility would require more affordable housing in those areas to be provided. And those would operate as one market then. They would just be differentiated by the price of those areas and therefore as a representation of the amenity within each one of those areas.
So to give you a concrete example, if there were more affordable housing in Wanaka, there'd be less take up in Luggett.
Yes. Yes.
Not wishing to suggest that Luggett is not the centre of the known world.
Yeah. Yes. So you want to, I mean, the amenity obviously comes with economic efficiency as well. To provide that in a location such as the Wanaka Town Centre has a greater degree of efficiency generally for the market as a whole than in somewhere like Luggett.
Lugate.
Sorry?
Lugate.
Lugate, yes.
Now, there is a question that I'll ask you in the expectation that you'll probably defer to Mr. Barr. Your paragraph 5.11 of your evidence in chief says that across the district empty homes are expected to continue to increase, but the assumption in the period to 2048 is a negative 15% growth in this area. And why is that different? That the district overall is expected to increase the number of empty homes, and given that the district is only two halves, that means Queenstown's increasing and Wanaka's decreasing. Why is that?
Obviously, a question raised by Ms.
Yes, that too.
Well, yeah, sorry. Probably, as you say, best dealt with. I mean, the decrease in that in this particular ward comes from the rationale figures, I haven't actually seen an explanation for that decrease to this point.
But in terms of the flow-on effect, if that assumption were unfounded, and that the proportion of empty homes were to continue to remain at around 33% of the total, what would that do to your predictions?
We'd be looking at, it drops from just over 2,000, I think, now to about 1,400 or something like that, off the top of my head. But I think you would have an expectation of between 500 and 800 additional homes. And given that we are currently sitting at about 1,600 over what is required to 2048, then I think you'd still sit within that range quite comfortably.
It would soak up approximately 50% of your margin.
It has the potential to, yes, yes.
Yeah, look, on the basis that these are all predictions, and the further out we predict, the greater margin of error.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing to consider potentially there is that there is a different motivation generally for holiday homes than for homes that people actually occupy. And that 20% profit margin doesn't necessarily come into play in terms of the feasibility at that point, because people are building these often themselves and don't require that profit margin that's required under the development model.
So if anything, that may suggest that first rather than...
Have the potential to be, yes.
In terms of the discussion of Ms. Hampson's evidence of the latent demand for what she calls detached homes, my question for you is this a chicken and egg situation, that deciding what percentage of attached homes to, if there were more, would there be more demand?
I think that's probably the nail in the head right there. If you provide larger sites for people, generally there's demand for larger sites. So I think that's correct. I think what you do is you try and provide the market with enough choice and enough potential to meet that. And if there is, in fact, corresponding demand, then the market will actually pick up on that. And there's potentially lags in that. That is that the price of attached dwellings need to correspond and go would rise faster, which we haven't necessarily seen in this area, would rise faster than a standalone house because there is in fact more demand and more latent demand for attached dwellings. So we would see those increase in price at a greater rate than the standalone dwelling, and therefore the market would respond by taking up greater opportunities and realising the opportunities for the attached dwelling. We're not really seeing that at a greater rate than expected anyway.
And going back to our previous discussion, is this a point where the developer community are voting with their feet, that they don't think that there is that demand because they're not providing it, or that there's too great a risk that there is not?
I think that's right. There's you're right. I mean, essentially the market will respond to those factors eventually. And if the demand persists, then that risk decreases as well, and that risk decreases because the financial incentive increases over time, and therefore the risk margin that developers are willing to take to develop a product that's not necessarily prevalent in a given economy, the risk for that decreases or is recompensed by an increased profit margin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Offord. Any more from the team?
I've got one clarification. Mr. Osborne, if I understood your response to the chair relating to the medium density zones, you said that development may not be medium density, but you said it still results in medium density capacity. What I take from that is that a site that is zoned for medium density may be developed initially to a lower density, but you've taken into account the potential for that additional dwelling unit to be provided. Is that what you were...
What essentially we've done is we've looked at suboptimal models where the capacity for a given within a given zone isn't necessarily reached. So instead of two units in an area, you only actually end up with one. And the models actually considered that, and that's why the realised and feasible capacity within the medium density zone is a lot lower than the others, because it is easier sometimes to build one unit rather than two that the market may or may not accept.
What I didn't quite get is whether you have, in that situation, factored into the model that the extra capacity was still feasible as opposed to practically, theoretically
right.
Feasible versus practical.
Sure.
Because it seems to me that decisions that are made are not only based on the potential density, but where people actually want to locate their building. And it may be that the first dwelling just, that's it, it precludes any further development. I would just like to understand how that's factored into the model.
Essentially, it does preclude any other development on those sites because the improvement value on that site, unless you can actually build at a medium density level without removing any buildings that have been built, if they're standalone buildings, then that comes out of the model because the improvement value to land value is such that that won't be developed for some time until that building gets to the point where you can actually knock it down and build more units. So it does come out of the feasibility of that model at that point as well.
So do you take all of those possibilities out of the model, or is that a percentage that if the capacity in the zone is whatever, then
essentially
a percentage that is not realisable?
It is essentially a percentage that comes out because it's an average across the entire zone. So what the model does is it assumes a proportion of that is going to be suboptimally developed.
Oh, all right, that helps. Yeah. Yeah, got it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Thank you very much, Mr. Osborne, for your assistance. Much appreciated.
Can we now turn to Mr. Heath? Mr. Heath has filed two statements of evidence and also a summary of evidence, which I understand you can make possible.
Afternoon. I've been engaged by Queensland Lakes District Council to provide evidence in relation to retail equipment matters regarding the rezoning request by the Gordon Family Trust in the Upper Clutha area of Queensland Lakes District, and specifically in relation to determining the appropriate extent, appropriate land area, of the proposed Cadrona Valley Road and local shopping centre zone for retail and commercial activities. The key findings from my evidence in relation to the Cadrona Valley Road local shopping centre zone based on assessing the localised market, current and future, I consider a maximum convenience retail and commercial service activity provision of 3,000 square metres GFA is appropriate. B, in terms of an appropriate land provision, a sustainable GFA of 3,000 square metres translates into a land requirement of around 0.7 hectares of efficiently developed land within the zone. Cadrona Valley Road, sir. This excludes any provision for other land uses such as community facilities, recreational areas, reserves, playgrounds, etc., with any land allocation for these uses additional to the 0.7 hectares. And C, Willow Ridge Developments Limited, in attachment 2 to their submission, seek relief to reduce the size of the Cadrona Valley Road local shopping centre zone from an original 2.7 hectares to an unidentified scale. I agree that the extent of the Cadrona Valley Road local shopping centre zone should be reduced in size and assess the reduction in land for the commercial aspects of the Cadrona Valley Road zone, LSCZ, to 0.7 hectares as appropriate. Mr. Polkinghorn for the Gordon Family Trust provided evidence promoting the 2.7 hectare local shopping centre at Cadrona Valley Road that can encompass a broad range of activities that more closely reflects a wide centre zone. He has also failed, in my view, to consider the appropriate policy context and not consider the wider economic implications of his proposed policy setting when assessed against the entire local shopping centre zone across the district. Mr. Polkinghorn promotes large fashion stores, homeware stores, banks, cell phone stores, 1,500 square metre supermarket, large offices with no limit in Cadrona Valley. This, in my view, sounds more like a town centre, not a local shopping centre, as intended by the PDP policy framework. The local shopping centre provisions are very clear about wanting small scale, and 400, in my view, square metre threshold in the tenancy, in my view, is not that. Mr. Polkinghorn's statement focuses on providing population growth for the wider Queenstown Lakes district as a whole and projected tourism data for the wider Wanaka area as justification for his growth profile for the Cadrona Valley Road local shopping centre. However, the relevance of this growth data, which largely corresponds to growth in areas well beyond the localised catchment that the Cadrona Valley Road Local Shopping Centre is designed to service, in my view, is misplaced and largely irrelevant for the purpose of assessing the retail economic merits of the Cadrona Valley Road Centre and consequently the appropriate land provision for the centre. It remains unclear to me how Mr. Polkinghorne could reach such a conclusion without undertaking an assessment of the localised area specifically, as I have in my evidence, given the purpose and objective of the zone within the proposed PDP. Objective 15.2.1 mentions local shopping centres should be of a limited scale, supported by policies 15.2.1.1 and 15.2.1.4, which emphasise the requirement of the local shopping centre to meet the needs of the local community, local shopping functions, small scale, and not undermining large shopping centres. I have emphasised by underlining the key aspects there. Read cumulatively, objectives 15.2.1 and 15.2.2 and policies 15.2.1.1, 15.2.1.2, 15.2.1.4 and 15.2.2.1 clearly identify the anticipated retail status and function of the local shopping centre zone in the commercial network of the district. Additionally, non-commercial activity such as residential visitor accommodation is also enabled, which is intended to add vibrancy and vitality to the local shopping centres themselves, given their focus on servicing localised residential markets. Furthermore, the McDermott Consultants report dated March 2014 for Council Section 32 report concluded that the neighbourhood centre primarily designed to service the neighbourhood catchment with a mix of convenience, retail and commercial service activity was appropriate for Cadrona Valley Road Local Shopping Centre. This is summarised in the introduction of the report where it states, and I quote, "It is anticipated that the commercial area will include around six retail stores in the form of a neighbourhood or small suburban shopping centre." These findings support my position that the 2.7 hectares of the notified PDP is too large for commercial enablement based on what the localised market can support, and reinforces my position that 0.7 hectares is a more appropriate extent for commercial development at the Cadrona Valley Road Local Centre. Based on my evidence, Hearing Stream 8 and Hearing Stream 12, for the submitter, I consider Mr. Polkin has not undertaken the appropriate retail economic assessment in the context of the planning framework and policy setting of the PDP to determine 2.7 hectares as appropriate. There is no apparent analytical foundation or connection between his broad analysis and arriving at a conclusion of 2.7 hectares as appropriate provision for Cadrona Valley Road Local Shopping Centre specifically. There is no linkage I can determine between the localised market growth, demand, and the 2.7 hectares of supply promoted by Mr. Polkinghorne. Ms. Jones, reporting planner for council, promoted a 1 hectare land provision for the Cadrona Valley Road Local Shopping Centre in her rebuttal evidence. While this land provision is slightly larger than my recommended 0.7 hectares for retail and commercial activity, I'm comfortable with this provision as there are other land uses that can be accommodated within the local shopping centre zone that would improve the amenity and functionality of the Cadrona Valley Road Local Centre. A 1 hectare provision is not considered to be of a scale that would undermine the performance, function and growth potential of the wide centre network, current and future potential, in Wanaka, namely the Wanaka Town Centre and Three Parks. As such, I can support the 1 hectare land provision for the Cadrona Valley Road Local Centre. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heath. Just a couple of preliminary matters from me before I hand over to my colleagues. First is, you've obviously read the Section 32 analysis underpinning this issue, which I have to confess I have not yet. I suspect I'm going to have to. I suppose I should ask you then, what's your reading of how it is that Council came to the view that 2.7 hectare notified LSC was appropriate when on your evidence is that it's clearly far too big?
I haven't read the Section 32. I've read the McDermott report that fed into the Section 32. So I'm not too sure of the linkage between what his outcomes were in his report and his recommendations and the jump to 2.7 hectares. I can't correlate that connection. So I haven't seen anything in the reports to suggest that what McDermott Miller's outputs were suggesting and the 2.7 hectares. So I'm sorry, I don't understand the background to the 2.7 hectares in the notified version.
So, but from what you've read, the McDermott Miller conclusions didn't imply a larger area than you are now supporting.
No, he actually, if you read it, he identified six or so small shops, which is actually fewer than what I've determined as sustainable in the future. So technically you could argue he was supporting something slightly smaller than what I'm suggesting now.
And the other thing, for my personal benefit, I suspect certainly Commissioner Munro will maybe answer this question already, but I'll put it on the record. You've said that 1,500 square metre gross floor area would be a supermarket. Like, is that kind of size, is that right?
That's what was promoted, from my recollection, Mr. Polkinghorne's evidence for a small-scale supermarket within the zone. He identified 1,500 square metres.
And that's your experience. To ask an open question, what's you're familiar with the supermarket in central Wanaka? What approximate floor area would that have? Just to give me a sense of what 1,500 square metre floor area looks like.
I haven't got the exact measurement of that, but I think it's slightly larger than that. I think it's in the early 2000s, but again, I haven't got an exact measurement. So I anticipate what he's promoting would be slightly smaller than that. 1,500 square metres in general would represent a supermarket at the small end of their supermarket store size spectrum, but they are both brands, Progressives and Foodstuffs, are starting to develop a format that has small supermarket offerings ranging from about 1,100 square metres to 1,800 square metres to fit, I suppose you could say fit, into some smaller centres.
And would a smaller supermarket of that ilk be in competition with a supermarket in the central city, a central town?
Yes, it would. And they sell the same products, I think.
Yes, well, indeed. And similarly, 750 square metres, obviously it's half that, but
yep.
Can you give me a sense of what that would look like? Would they give me a comparative of, in the district? Something of that's around that's 750 metres?
Can't think of anything off the top of my head in terms of store size that jumped to mind. That's around about 750. 750 is a typical large format store. I don't consider 750 a supermarket. I call it more a large super rep / mini mart. We typically adopt 1,000 square metre threshold for when a food and grocery store becomes a small supermarket. But I can't think of a store off the top of my head that's equivalent to 750.
But that's helpful anyway.
Yeah.
Commissioner Munro.
Thank you. Mr. Heath, you have had a lot of experience in new small to medium and even large size commercial centres.
Yes.
Based on what we think we know at this point, the recommendation based on your evidence for a smaller 1 hectare area, approximately square shape, is the proposal. You're familiar with the proposed expert report. The evidence on behalf of the submitter, Duncan White, suggesting there's currently a consenting process for a road link to come through what would be the northern part of that between it and the healthcare centre, so there'd be a 7,000 metre-ish or slightly smaller, slight rectangle, limited road frontage to Cardrona Valley Road, probably no vehicle access from it, one would imagine, main vehicle access from the new road along the north. Contrast that with what I think was the Willow Ridge submission for the 1 hectare shape to be distributed in more of a ribbon shape following Cardrona Valley Road rather than a square. Getting a head around the size is clearly an important factor, but we haven't had very much evidence at all on the shape factor best likely to support the kind of land use outcome that the zone might be intended.
Yeah.
and I'm thinking of a long ribbon possibly supporting a strip of shops facing a street and a square shop supporting a square box in the middle surrounded by car parking. Very, very simplistically, of course. But I would invite, based on the experience you've had, and accepting you're not a design expert, but you've had a lot to do with what makes the store viable and not.
Yes.
If you could help explain to me, based on what you think the zone outcomes are promoting, why the squarer, squatter shape favoured by the council would be better than the skinnier ribbon shape that Willow Ridge is promoting, accepting that each one would be about a hectare.
Yeah. To be honest, I haven't considered the shape of the site. But from a commercial aspect, the ability to trade to one or two street fronts is the critical thing. Mm-hmm. And it's more about the store being able to play the centre being able to play its convenience function in the most appropriate way. So whatever makes access and convenience to those stores improved would result in a better outcome for the community.
And so based on your understanding of the catchments and who would be served by that centre, would access and orientation of stores predominantly facing Cardrona Valley Road be preferable or more successful or more desirable than stores possibly orientated and facing to the potential link road that might connect with Cardrona Valley Road and then carry further through the town?
My understanding would be because that's the highest or higher traffic volume road, as I understand. So the ability to access the centre from that road would be an important factor.
And which of the two?
Cardrona Valley Road.
Okay. And of course, there might be a whole bunch of traffic engineering reasons why.
Correct.
As sometimes happens with centres, why engineers might not want people to get to it.
Yeah.
If we were not persuaded to shrink the notified size down, or possibly if we were attracted to it but maybe not to the extent proposed, mm-hmm. what are the key land use outcomes you think would be most probable to take advantage of that larger zoning area? Presumably you wouldn't just get two bakeries, two takeaways, there'd be some additional things that might locate there. What do you think they'd be?
I suspect the first thing they'll try and do is maximise the ability for retail and commercial activity there, because that'll be the high yielding land use. So they might be prepared to push the boundaries there to get retail tenancies there that would possibly delay and compromise the development of the three parks offering, or undermine some of the activity in the Wānaka Town Centre. Other land uses that could go there.
Can I just touch on that? It was the commercial retail I was interested in. Sorry, that's flawed question. What I really wanted to get my head around was, if the zone were bigger than you recommend, to what extent, realistically, could local-focused, local-serving retail be provided for? Or whether we're really talking about retail and commercial activity that's not based on serving the local catchment, but a wider area that could then compete with, as you say, three parks.
Well, no, that's exactly what is more likely to happen, is that it will generate store types or develop store types that are not localised in their nature, that have a wider catchment, wider spread. And that's when you could start seeing opportunistic retailers who want to say, oh great, I can move out of the town centre now and come locate here and service the same wider market.
I'm aware of contention over the years around the point that a resource management instrument seeking to maintain, enhance or protect the roles that centres provide communities.
Yeah.
And the line at which it becomes trade competition of council picking winners.
Yeah.
And so in terms of your concern about the point at which the proposed new centre might start undermining Central Wānaka and three parks, mm-hmm. and accepting you're not here to defend with us, are you able to give us a steer of whether or not your concern is based on effectively the policy structure of the plan, which is saying certain senses are more important than others and other senses shouldn't undermine others, which might be one consideration. And where it's about, in your view, measurable, defendable adverse effects, i.e. a loss of activity in central Wanaka leading to a loss of some form of exchange and then a loss of community benefits or something like that.
Combination of both.
Yeah.
The policy framework is fairly clear, in my view, about what the anticipated role is, and bringing in those stores that would attract spend from a much broader area is starting to chip away and undermine and compromise that. And secondly, the extent of trade diversion will be dependent on the level of stores that actually could be developed there. I haven't assessed or determined what that would be. But 2.7 hectares, I think in my original evidence, there was a map on the extent of it over the Wanaka Town Centre, and it shows you that you could have quite extensive development. It's 27,000 square metres, so you could build 10,000 square metres of retail commercial space there quite comfortably. And in the size of Wanaka, that's a meaningful offer. In composition.
When, and again, appealing to your experience in planning new centres, one thing that hasn't been discussed as a potential occupier of zoned area would be, for want of a better phrase, the public amenity of a park or squares or those sort of things that one might expect a submitter promoting more area might say is on their grand plan.
Yeah.
Is your experience that in the absence of council plans and council documents saying those sort of things should happen that developers typically offer or deliver?
No, my experience is they may look be on the plan initially, but the decision making process has changed over time, demand changes over time and opportunity changes over time. So that typically leads to its highest and best use, and in my experience, some of the centres I've been involved with at a localised level, the parks or the reserves that are part of it often don't get developed or get developed over, unless there's a sort of fairly more stringent policy framework in place about what they can and can't do.
When the three parks zone was put in place, one of the methods that was used to help manage the potential competition or conflict between that new centre and existing Wanaka Town Centre was that over and above a certain threshold of commercial or retail activity, there was an obligation through resource consents on an applicant in the three parks area to perform what, for want of a better phrase, it might actually be the phrase, was a town centre health check, which was some means of trying to say, is there a way of more precisely finding that balance at the time? Mm-hmm. Assuming for the time being that such a method could be within the scope of the submission to mediate any uncertainty we might have about shrinking the area to the extent proposed, would a method like that, in your view, have a reliability to it, or are you so confident in what you've done that there's just no case or basis for it?
The concern I'd have applying that approach is what methodology you're going to use. What is a health check in terms of an economic assessment? It's highly dependent on that. And secondly, I'm confident in my numbers. There's fat built in. I know what the local market can sustain from a convenience aspect. And we've also got to remember this isn't the only centre that's servicing this market. It's only 2 minutes from the Wanaka Town Centre. So the Wanaka Town Centre and the Three Park Centre are part of the network of centres that are going to service this market. And the local shopping centre zone is very clear in that this is meant to be small scale, serve the day-to-day convenience aspect of it. That's what my assessment is based on, and that's the land provision I settle on.
Yeah. And another string to that bow that I'll ask your view of as well could be that whereas Three Parks is identified as a particular scale of centre in Wanaka, mm-hmm. and it may be that a comparison just with central Wanaka is appropriate, could be that such a method on a local centre would not only have to think about Wanaka Town Centre, but also Three Parks Town Centre and possibly others, further complicating mm-hmm. the gymnastics there. Would that be fair?
Yeah. Could be quite a money assessment.
Mm. Okay, look, thank you for that, Mr. Heath. I've got nothing other questions.
Commissioner Hudson.
No, thank you, sir.
Commissioner McLeod. One, and that's to do with you made a comment, I'm not sure who it was, 2 seconds to find it, all the lines a bit too quick. That the area, I think it's to do with the area being, considering your rebuttal, the area wasn't, didn't allow for community centres. Yeah, and I was wondering, and you, the other council response to keep it at 1 hectare, essentially that's the fact that could accommodate that sort of
further additional alternative land uses from retail commercial.
Yeah, I mean I'm reasonably happy with shrinking it potentially as a concept. I did some research about the where we're going to be in 2030, and one of the things that struck me was that the Americans are estimating that 50% of all shopping malls in America would have gone.
That's right, yes.
And
this isn't a shopping mall.
Yeah, really, indeed. But you did, there was some work you did on calculating the internet retail spend growth. I'm interested to see how you came by those numbers. It was a non-linear percentage decrease of 2.5%, and they seem quite conservative.
That's small. That's because internet retail in New Zealand's in its infancy, and it's very sector specific. That's why you don't see many record shops now, and books are struggling.
Real Groovy's coming back then.
The Aucklanders will be happy.
Yeah.
So, and it's not really directly related to convenience retail per se. There is only one supermarket brand that currently is offering internet sales, that's Progressives. So you can order online, but that's often delivered from the local supermarket anyway. So it doesn't necessarily translate to a drop-off in demand for local stores. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So because the you put an online order in, that goes to its local store, they get it and then they drop off to you. It just means less people through their turnstile. It doesn't mean less sales overall. So it's not really directly related to local convenience, which is more impulsive, more I want it now related, whereas internet retailing is more on getting a cheaper price for comparison goods, whether it be clothing, whether it be shoes, handbags, and things like that. So I've factored that it was 2.5%. Currently, the more recent data shows it's about 6% of the market.
Mm.
We factored in our modelling over the next 30 years for it to go to about 15%. And people are saying, and it's a bit dartboard throwing really, but they're talking about 15 to 20% ultimately. So it's not going to take over the market, it's just going to be an entrenched player in the market, probably when we reach maturity around 15 to 20%. So that's what we factored in.
So what you're saying is that internet shopping will account for 15 to 20% of the total shopping market?
Over time.
Really?
Not currently at the moment.
So that's the ultimate sort of end level?
That's where most market commentators are sort of suggesting it's likely to settle. But it's still a very small part of the market, total market now. And of course, internet retailing here doesn't always relate to a New Zealand retailer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Heath, I wonder if you could explain to me something in your rebuttal evidence, 3.12, that I went round and round in slow circles trying to understand. This is the comparison you mentioned with 2.7 hectares versus the Wanaka Town Centre. It's the sentence, this area.
So what?
3.12. Of your rebuttal, page 4.
Sorry, carry on.
This is the paragraph immediately above figure 1.2, figure 1.
Yeah.
So, say, so first sentence, extent, you've shown the extent of a 2.7 hectare land area overlaid on the town centre. Understand yes. that. This area, namely the, I think the, this area of the town centre, encompasses more than 3,000 square metres, indicating efficient commercial development of 0.7 hectares can accommodate a 3,000 square metre commercial footprint. Yes. And I suppose I can't understand the logic, but I'm wondering whether there's a nought missing somewhere.
The Well, the 0.7 hectares is 7,000 square metres of land. So I haven't, the overlay on that map, the 2.7 hectares red block over the Wanaka Town Centre area, I haven't assessed the actual, or measured the level of retail activity that's currently under there. But it's got the supermarket and it's got lots of other block frontages facing that street, so there would be significantly more than the 3,000 square metres. So that's the front end of that sentence.
Yeah, that was what I assumed.
Yeah.
And so, how does it indicate the last proposition then?
Oh, I see that now. It should reference my figure. This is no direct relationship, you're quite correct. Should relate to my figure, not the 3,000 figure.
Well, that's a relief. Yep. I wasn't just going potty.
No, you're not going potty.
And you're discussing at 3:13 the following paragraph. The implications of the road that Mr. Polkenhorn and Mr. White discussed, which would go through the middle of a shrunk shopping zone.
Yes.
And you said, well, your answer is if any of the 0.7 hectare was in the pathway of a future road, then the shopping centre would simply need to be moved south by a commensurate amount.
Right.
And I suppose the question that was in my mind is that given that the area to the south would be local density residential, if there are houses built on it in the meantime, potential to move it anywhere would seem to be somewhat limited.
What I was referring to there is my understanding of the point. I was determining the appropriate land provision for commercial retail activity, 0.7 hectares. Where that sat within the 2.7 hectares was in effect floating. It wasn't in any fixed location as I understood. So if a road came along and took part of the 0.7 hectares where it was intended to go, then you just need to move that 0.7 hectares elsewhere within the 2.7 zone. It doesn't affect my determination of the land requirement of 0.7 hectares being required for commercial commercial and retail activity.
And so I understand now, yeah. So the question is whether the juxtaposition of the two processes will in fact allow that to happen.
Yes, yeah, there's no relationship to the road affecting what I determine as an appropriate land provision for commercial and retail activity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Finn.
Any more for any more?
Just a comment, that overlay of the 2.7 hectares on the town centre was really useful. Yep. It was a really good example of scale.
Yeah, I thought it was useful to show all of that.
Well, I think that is it. Thank you very much for your assistance, Mr. Heath.
No problem, thank you.
Council, it's 7 minutes to one. Do you want to start, Ms. Jones? Perhaps read her
summary. Perhaps you could read her summary.
Read her summary and we'll start up. That's great.
Chair, you have a section 42A for the Wanaka Business Group was prepared by Ms. Bovines, and in the course of preparing for the hearing, she's become unavailable for other reasons. Ms. Jones has, through her rebuttal evidence, confirmed that she accepts and adopts the recommendations made in section 42A, except where she makes some specific, some additional comments. They are clearly set out in her rebuttal. So, for the purposes of this, Ms. Jones has essentially taken on Ms. Bovine's section 42A and then responded responded to the submitter's evidence in her rebuttal.
I understand that's the basis. You helpfully gave us a memorandum to that effect. Just one preliminary issue. Could we have a health report on Ms. Bovine's child?
I'm not placed to provide that. Mr. Davis might be able to assist.
Indeed.
No.
Before Ms. Jones does start, we do have a copy of the extract from the Wanaka Town Centre guidelines that were asked for earlier in the week, so I will hand those up.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody. Just before I start through my summary, I just wanted to make one small correction to the rebuttal evidence, and that's simply to delete in its entirety paragraph 6.3, if you wouldn't mind striking that.
Thank you.
So I've been engaged by the QLDC to provide rebuttal evidence in relation to planning matters regarding rezoning requests grouped as Wanaka Business in the Upper Clutha area of the Queenstown Lakes District. 9 submissions and 7 further submissions on rezoning or mapping annotations have been received in relation to the Wanaka Business area. These are considered in the Section 42A report of Amy Bovies, and most are further considered in my rebuttal evidence. For the purpose of drafting my rebuttal evidence, I have agreed with and adopted Amy Bovies' Section 42A report, and in some cases have provided additional detail in response to submitters' evidence. In all instances, I concur with the recommendations of the 42A report. The local shopping centre zone on Cadrona Valley Road. In response to submissions from Willow Ridge and Mr. Ledgerwood, I recommend that the local shopping centre zone on Cadrona Valley Road A, be reduced from 2.7 hectares to 1 hectare, B, that a maximum 3,000 square metre cap be introduced on the total gross floor area of retail and office activities enabled within the zone, along with a policy supporting this, and that the balance land is rezoned as low density residential zone. In my opinion, reducing the size of the zone together with capping the total amount of retail and office activity will be more effective at providing a local shopping centre that is of a limited scale, focused to the day-to-day needs of the community, that's Objective 15.2.1, and which does not undermine the larger shopping centres. In response to submissions from Satomi and J.A. Ledgerwood, in my opinion, additional requirements relating to height, ground level, and the provision of landscape boundary setbacks are not necessary in order for the development within the local shopping centre zone to respond appropriately to its neighbourhood setting, Objective 15.2.2. Specifically in respect of the submitter's land, I anticipate that the recommended removal of the local shopping centre zone from the land immediately adjacent to the submitter's boundary should wholly address their concerns. For completeness, I note that the reference in paragraph 5.6 of Ms. Bovies' Section 42A report to her business zones hearing, Section 42A report should refer to paragraph 13.8. I note that the reference in paragraph 5.6 of Ms. Bovies' 42A report, where she refers to her business zones hearing 42A report, should refer to paragraphs 13.8 to 13.17 of that report, rather than paragraph 4.13 as stated. Just mention that because it confused me. It might confuse you. In response to submissions from Wanaka Lakes Health Centre and Aspiring Lifestyle Retirement Village, I recommend that the large lot residential zone be retained over the Wanaka Health Centre and hospital sites at 21 and 23 Cadrona Valley Road, rather than rezoning this land as local shopping centre zone. The range and density of activities provided by the local shopping centre zone is considerably greater than what is currently enabled through implemented restless consents that exist for the health centre and hospital sites. In Mr. Heath's opinion, the provision of any more than 7,000 square metres of local shopping centre land in this location is unwarranted, and I note that the submitter has provided no evidence to the contrary. As such, consistent with the reasons for reducing the notified local shopping centre zone on Cadrona Valley Road, I consider that rezoning a further 2.15 hectares of land as local shopping centre zone in this location would not be an appropriate means of achieving the PDP objectives. Furthermore, relying on the evidence of Ms. Banks, such rezoning would likely exacerbate existing traffic and parking issues. In response to the submission from Jim Ledgerwood, I recommend that the low-density residential zone be retained on those sites located on the corner of the Cadrona Valley Road and Orchard Road, rather than rezoning these sites as either local shopping centre or mixed business zone. The rezoning of this relatively large 2.34 hectare area of land to either local shopping centre zone or business mixed use would enable a considerably greater density of commercial use than is currently enabled by resource consents for the site. Such rezoning could therefore potentially undermine existing commercial centres as well as the viability of the recommended local shopping centre zone on Cadrona Valley Road, and would result in a reduced level of service at the Cadrona Valley Road intersection. In summary, such zoning would not be consistent with the relevant objectives of the PDP. In response to the submission by Susan Meyer, I recommend retaining the 75% building coverage rule of the local shopping centre rather than increasing it to 80% as sought. While I accept the triangular shape of the zone may restrict the development potential of some sites, in my opinion, this can be considered at the subdivision design stage, and if necessary, dispensation of the 75% rule can be considered through a restricted discretionary consent at the land use consent stage. I also recommend facilitating a connection between the health centre and the local shopping centre by maintaining local shopping centre zoning over that land which adjoins the health centre. Medium density residential zone, town centre transition zone, where the acronyms really get interesting. In response to submissions from Verena and Curlew, I recommend that the NDR zone town centre transition overlay be retained as notified rather than rezoning the area to Wanaka town centre zone as sought. I note that the NDR town centre transition overlay covers an area of approximately 3.9 hectares. In my view, the key issues relate to achieving a high-quality compact Wanaka Town Centre, achieving high-quality streetscapes along both Brownston and Russell Streets, managing the potential effects on neighbouring residential properties, managing parking and access issues and the uncertainties around that, and providing for flexible land use that is responsive to market demands. In my opinion, the MDR zone Town Centre transition overlay zoning is the most appropriate, and that it will enable development that supports rather than competes directly with the Wanaka Town Centre. It will provide for a wide range of activities, hence enabling a mixed-use environment, including medium-density housing at ground level, encourage high-quality urban design outcomes, ensure built form and activities that are sensitive to the adjoining residential properties, enable parking and access issues to be considered through the resource consent process, and avoid the need for unnecessarily complex provisions and very likely the need to apply different underlying zones to the Brownston Street and Russell Street parts of the transition area. In response to the submission from Curlew, I recommend that the boundary of the MDR Town Centre transition overlay is retained rather than extending it to include those sites fronting Upton Street between Howick and Dungarvan Streets as sought. Ms. Banks considers that extending the town centre transition overlay to sites along Upton Street would result in increased vehicle traffic movements in that area and would exacerbate the current high parking demands in that part of the MDR zone. I note that no evidence has been provided on behalf of Curlew in support of extending the transition overlay to Upton Street.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. We'll take the lunch adjournment. Resume at 2.
Thank you.